Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Garga Muni said, "My dear Nanda Maharaj, I am the priestly guide of the Yadu dynasty. This is known everywhere. Therefore, if I perform the purificatory process for your sons, Kamsa will consider them the sons of Devaki." So if you repeat after me each phrase. Garga Muni said, "My dear Nanda Maharaj, I am the priestly guide of the Yadu dynasty. This is known everywhere. Therefore, if I perform the purificatory process for your sons, Kamsa will consider them the sons of Devaki." Purport. Garga Muni indirectly disclosed that Krishna was the son of Devaki, not of Yashoda, since Kamsa was already searching for Krishna. If the purificatory process was undertaken by Garga Muni, Kamsa might be informed, and that would create a catastrophe. It may be argued that although Garga Muni was the priest of the Yadu dynasty, Nanda Maharaj also belonged to that dynasty. Nanda Maharaj, however, was not acting as a Kshatriya. Therefore, Garga Muni said, "If I act as your priest, this will confirm that Krishna is the son of Devaki." Om Adnanatim Marandasya Jananjana Salakeya Chakso Unmilatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So, interesting situation. Garga Muni is a very powerful, you could say, sage, devotee of the Lord. And he's not inconsiderate of the situation, that here he has been offered to do the service by Nanda Maharaj for the name-giving ceremony. But he also considers that there's another factor involved. There's danger involved. Kamsa is searching for your son, and he sent demons out killing children of the same period of birth on the pretext that it might just be Krishna, because he was informed that Krishna has been born, that he's no longer here, he's living elsewhere. And so immediately Kamsa has started a search for the child. And it's an interesting sort of comparison is with the Bible, of when Jesus was born. You know, Herod, the king at that time, he also had a fear of this Christ coming, who was the king, who would be king of the Jews. He felt his position was going to be jeopardized by this new divine person coming. And he did the same thing. He sent out soldiers looking for babies and started slaughtering them. Very interesting situation. So there's no mercy, it seems, for the search for those who are who want the best for humanity. It seems that somehow our conditioned nature, in terms when we get to power, we start to become corrupted. That somehow the kings, though they're supposed to be the servants of the people, according to the Vedic principles, that they become fearful of their position, of their service, but fearful in the sense that they become attached to the power. And this is, of course, a demoniac principle. If you go in Bhagavad Gita, and it describes the demoniac and the divine persons. And you can wonderfully see there, I don't know if you, but you see the wonderful qualities of a devotee right at the beginning. And then, almost for the rest of the chapter, they're describing the demoniac characteristics. And Magur Maharaj was saying that one of his disciples went up to him and said, "This is my favorite chapter. It's telling me who I am." And he didn't mean the divine characteristics. He meant that actually the demoniac characteristics that brought us to this world dwell within us. Very interesting. But by the great mercy of such devotees, Garga Muni, Srila Prabhupada, that these are pure devotees. They come with the interest of the fallen souls in their heart. That they've got a message that is pure in its nature. It's not a message from them, it's a message from Krishna. But it's a message through them. But also that they are in this world and they feel for the fallen souls because they see the suffering, but also they experience, you could say, suffering. Prabhupada would say it's minimized, but they're here, they're in a human form of life, but also they have to go through great tapasya, great difficulties. Prabhupada explained trying to make devotees is like trying to tame tigers. And it's a fact, isn't it? Anybody, if you're in Krishna consciousness or involved with the devotees for long, you know, there's clashes. But also, there's loving exchanges. And the loving exchanges usually come after clashes. It's a very purifying experience. And so, what's happening here with Garga Muni, he's pointing out that this could jeopardize your son's existence and it could cause problems. So what can we do about it? And so we have to search for a solution. And there's very nice explanation when Mother Aditi was pregnant or made pregnant and the Lord came to her and said, "Look, you're pregnant with me. You're going to come as Vamana Dev. But I don't want you to tell anyone. You mustn't tell anyone." And then the verse after that he says, "That which is kept secret is successful." And this is a very wonderful teaching, actually. Because this is intimate knowledge. This is the knowledge. It stops hajiism. That whatever we experience in our Krishna consciousness is very, very personal in its nature. And we have to know who we can share with and who we cannot share with. Otherwise, we become sahajis. "Do you know, I had a dream about Krishna, I had a dream about Prabhupada last night, and it all sorted everything out. You know, and he was so kind to me." And you have to be very careful. It's a personal exchange. It's like, actually, sometimes the wife will, or the husband, nowadays they're down the pub and they're telling everybody about their personal intimate relations. And it's just gossip. There's no such thing as intimacy. It's just sensationalism. You know, there's no culture. There's no consideration of feelings. So, what is happening here is a testimony here that things that are kept secret because it could jeopardize a life and your spiritual life. We got to look at these things. So, we have authorities. We have experienced devotees. Radhanath Swami, I was listening to his lecture on this. He said, the fact was that Garga Muni was a trustworthy person and that he could give blessings. That he was invited and he had the power of giving blessings because he was a devotee. That this is a very important factor in our lives. And so, interesting thing. Sometimes I certainly, from my point of view, I'm not truly appreciative of this. You know, I hear it so much, but I don't really comprehend it. But I'm starting to comprehend it now, when I've suffered. It's the suffering that somehow brought me into contact with the blessings of the devotees because of their compassion and their sympathy and understanding and guidance. So this association with devotees or who we're speaking to is a very important thing. We should, and it's one of the loving exchanges, isn't it, to share our heart or to also give confidential knowledge with each other. So, devotional life is a roller coaster when we start. But somehow or other, we have to become stable. We have to be stable and steady in whatever we do. The search is not outside ourselves. The search is within. Radhanath Swami is very wonderful pointing this out. He said, if you criticize someone, that's you you're talking about. That's you you're talking about. You are seeing you. This person is the mirror of what's going on inside of ourselves. So, the danger is that by criticizing, we associate with the lower modes of nature. Because obviously, it takes us from not the transcendental position. You're considering those things that are not on the transcendental position. So it's bad association. We have to become safe in our association. And our mind can be the worst association. And this is what Radhanath Swami is pointing out. Our mind is not our guide. The devotees and what Prabhupada said and these acharyas are telling us are our guide. So it's important that it becomes a personal movement. And certainly it will cause us problems. So Garga Muni is saying to, look, you can have this name-giving ceremony, but there's a danger. Directly Kamsa find out. Kamsa finds out, then you're in trouble. He'll come and search for your baby, and thinking that it's the son of Devaki, which inadvertently he knows it is the son of Devaki, and it is the son of Asadev. But he points out this common factor that he's the guide for the Yadu dynasty. In terms of spiritual master, in terms of spiritual matters and samskaras. So he's powerful. And so whatever he does, if it's known, it becomes known to Kamsa, The threat is there. And so he's informing the parents. Of course, what happens, the ceremony then is done in secret. Interesting. What happened with Jesus? What happened? He went, they went to Bethlehem. They went in a stable. There were cows there. You know, very interesting parallels. And so the most important thing is this secret that this personality must be protected. And they're divine in their nature, and they've come to rescue us. Not that we have some wonderful name-given ceremony and everybody comes and we tell the world. What is the most important fact is that it's a purificatory ceremony. It's a ceremony that in the name-giving process, that it's part of our purification in this world, and it's laid down in the samskaras. And we, if it's given by the appropriate person, in other words, a devotee, a Vaishnava, then this is fine. But Prabhupada points out that don't go to a professional Brahmin because they may not be a devotee. So we have to understand this person giving you the blessings through the samskaras must be a devotee. This is a very important understanding of whatever's happening here in this temple. We should understand that this is the factor, this connection with Krishna. That it is for the child's sake that a connection with Krishna be formed. But also, we're told by Prabhupada, there's no need for all these samskaras. You chant Hare Krishna. It's the Mahamantra that is our samskara for this age. But still, these purificatory processes like marriages and name-giving ceremonies are performed. But the factor must be there. It's through the devotional aspect. It must be through devotion. It's not a monetary exchange. So many people are asking for blessings here. And personally, they've asked me for all sorts of blessings, and I say no. And I say, I can't give you a blessing for a car. But I can get, we go in front of the deities, we can chant Hare Krishna together, and you'll have a personal life assurance scheme. You'll get it through a personal loving exchange with your prayers in your heart. And we can chant the Maha Mantra today. And you personally communicate with the deities. This is a very important thing. But also, then I say to myself, well, I brought my children here. And also, they had children. And my daughter asked if that we could get the blessings of the deities, you know, for the children, like a christening. Because that's their understanding. I thought, well, why not? So I got Anuruddha Prabhu. We sat in front of the deities. He tea-lacked them because it, for me, it was important that it was somebody else give it to him who I trusted. And so in that way, it was given by a person that I trusted to do that. And the children would get some benefit because they're sat in front of the deities and it's a serious moment in their lives. They experienced a spiritual activity in their lives that will never be lost. They don't know, really know on the subtle level what's happening to them. But if it's given with blessings, it will blossom. So this is the most important thing. We must look for these blessings. For our spiritual lives to blossom, we must have these blessings. And it's not that you, again, Radhanath Swami was talking about that you go around getting all the blessings for whatever you're going to do, for every little thing. It's not like that, actually. He says, the serious times in your life when you need blessings are those either through crises or, you know, pilgrimages, all these things where somehow or other you need a guiding or divine providence coming through the devotees who are your well-wishers to take you through this journey. It's important. And we call it almost a prayer of intercession when you get blessings. You know, somebody, a gentleman came here this weekend. We were setting up the tables and he came over to me and he said, look, that should I, what can I do? You know, my wife's just died and what should I do with her ashes? And I said to him, well, there's a couple of things, you know, where they should go. But then I pointed out that also that you should pray for her. There should be a prayer of intercession from you deep within your heart that you should be sharing with the Lord that and your deceased wife that this, I want your well wishes and I want you to be safe on your journey in your spirit with your spiritual soul. Because Prabhupada says that unless we do these things, it's all of a personal nature. It brings us closer to Krishna. Just like this, it's a personal experience. They're looking at the safety of a child. So every parent know, or what marriage, that marriage means sacrifice. And and Prabhupada explains that marriage is for children, having children. So you have to serve these children in such a way, they're Krishna's children, that they will be brought closer to Krishna. So this is the whole idea of what's being shown here. That Nanda Maharaj, he's got everything materially that he wants. But he wants the spiritual nature of this child to be, and Balaram, to be looked after. That's his prime concern. So what we can see here is a service. It's a devotional service to the Supreme Lord directly, knowingly or unknowingly. But we can also reflect this in our lives, that the way we serve our children is for their well-being, not for what we want for them. You know, I want my son to be a lawyer, I want to get blessings that he gets his exams and all these sort of things. That's okay. But that's mapped out, actually, in their karmic life. Parents want the well wishes, but they don't always listen to what or see what the nature is of the child. They see what they think is best for them. And that's another story. Because if we're not careful as parents, and I can do the same with my children, look, you're foolish if you carry on the way you are, being atheists and God knows what. You've got to follow this path. Do you think it'll work? Do you think if I say that to them, it would have any effect? No, they just rebel. We have to understand what's going on with them and what their needs are, and the gradual process of Krishna consciousness. We have to see what we can give that is a seed planted on the subtle platform for all for all our children, not what we want to, in our gross point of view, maybe we think is best for them. They shouldn't do this job, they should do this job. Control, control, control. We are not the controllers. We have to see what the child, who the child is. And so, there's also an astrological chart done for the child. They're guided by Vedic astrology in such a way that it says, this is what your children are born under, and this appears to be their nature. It's a tool. It has to be used in that way. And it's for the child's well-being, not for what you think that, no, that's wrong, that astrological chart's wrong, no, he should be doing like this. No. There's too much of that in this world because it's a material concept. We have to know that there are things that can be engaged in Krishna's service in such a way that that child will develop as a person. And this should be our main concern in Krishna consciousness. That somehow its nature will be fulfilled, the child's nature, and also its Krishna consciousness will be fulfilled. Any questions, comments?